We have a lot of representation by women. So we have a lot of women leaders. We have a lot of women that are leading our not-for-profits. When you think about that perspective, I think we have an opportunity to really step into the ring and lead in many different ways. Many different ways. And one of them is just showing up.
Welcome to Voices of Leadership, the podcast that shines a spotlight on the remarkable women of the International Women's Forum, who are reshaping industries, defying norms, and being instigators of change. I'm your host, Amy, and I'm inviting you on a journey through the minds of trailblazers. Each episode is a candid conversation where our guests will share their insights and experiences as they recount their successes, challenges, thoughts on leadership, and so much more. On today's episode, we welcome Jane Klugman. Jane is an amazing leader with a multifaceted career spanning entrepreneurship, real estate, and business development. Jane is very involved in the community. She serves on a variety of boards, including IWF as president of the Waterloo chapter, and she's involved in community events such as Oktoberfest. Jane is currently the honorary colonel of the Royal Highland Fusiliers of Canada, making her the first woman in the history of the regiment to hold this esteemed position. Welcome, Jane. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Amy. I'm glad to be here.
So let's start right away with IWF. You and I primarily know each other through IWF. It's sort of a great example of how IWF connects with people, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, you know, one of the main goals of IWF is to bring senior women together. And not just the senior women that always hang out together. It's an opportunity to meet new women in the community and across the country, for that matter, and around the world.
You are currently the president of the Waterloo chapter of IWF. And this past June, our chapter hosted Canada Connects, which is a national IWF event. What was that experience like?
So it was amazing to have everyone come to Waterloo. And, you know, one of our challenges was that we just have so much to show off in Waterloo that it was like, okay, our agenda was huge. We had to cut it back. And even at the end of the conference, the women were like, it was so great, but it was so much. And it was like, okay, well, yeah, it was a lot, but it was, you know, we saw Perimeter Institute. We saw Institute of Quantum Computing. We went through Google. We went to Communitech. We did the clay and glass museum. We just did everything. Plus, we had a gala ball with a dance party. Truly, I think it brought our chapter together and allowed us to work together in a way we never have before. And I think our chapter is much stronger as a result. And then hosting a big party, it's, you know, it always brings the chapter together. So it was a great experience.
It was a great event. I had a fantastic time.
I'm glad. Because, you know, we worked on it from September through to June when we had the event. And it's like, yeah, you put a lot of effort into it. And it's a volunteer, you know, thing. And you just do it because it's the right thing to do. And we had 100 women that came and it was great.
What was the one thing on the agenda you had to cut that you wish you didn't?
Oh, my. There was so much that we had to cut. I think we wanted to go through some tech companies and we couldn't get through. We just didn't have time to do that. We wanted to go through Colt Canada.
Oh, yes.
So Colt, Joanne is one of our members and, you know, that would have been special because no one gets in there.
No.
You know, but that's the thing about IWF is we get these behind the scene passes, backstage passes, whatever you want to call them, to go and do some really, really cool things, see some really cool things. There was a lot that we had to cut then. I was like, we need to have a 10-day conference.
We'll just have to do it again sometime.
Right, exactly.
Who actually introduced you to IWF?
Ginny.
So, of course.
And I know Ginny was on the first podcast. So Ginny came to me when the chapter started and said, we have this, where do all the women get together in town? And I was like, well, you know, we hang out with the men and we go to Rotary and we do the things that the men do. She said, you mean there's no women's group? And I said, well, there's Zonta and, you know, there's some other things. I said, but I don't hang out in those groups. That's not where my client base is, really. So she said, well, in Toronto, we have this chapter of IWF and I think we should start one here. And I said, Well, I'm not so sure about that. You know, I don't really join women's groups and I don't want to get together and bitch about the glass ceiling and, you know, talk about men in a bad way. So, you know, if it is about that, if that's where it turns out, I'm out. She said, Jane, I would never do anything like that. Just come to the first meeting and let's see. So the first meeting, we go around the table and everybody's like, why are you here? And I said, exactly that. And from that day forward, we have never bitched about the glass ceiling. We have never talked badly about men. We are there to promote women's leadership and we do it in a very positive way. And it's a group that, you know, that was 15 years ago, 16 years ago. I'm not a joiner. So for me to be the president of the chapter, is
you're
like,
the president.
I kind of joined. I'm kind of there.
I'm all in now.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'm glad Ginny approached you.
Yeah, me too.
In addition to IWF, you are very involved in the community in Kitchener-Waterloo. You also sit on a variety of boards with different focuses. How do you decide which boards you would like to be involved with?
So in the beginning, years and years and years ago, when I was asked, I would sit on a board. And there wasn't a lot of thought put into it. But as I got older, it was more about where can I add value? What do I really find interesting? And who else is on that board that I really want to work with? And so those are my criteria right now.
And I can relate to what you said about just saying yes when you're younger and when you're just starting out. I feel that I did the same. How can we encourage young leaders who are approached to be on a board to ask those questions when they feel like they should just join because it's their first board or they're being asked?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't know. Right now, it's really difficult to get on boards.
Yes.
So not so much for not-for-profit. They're still, you know, trying. And I think it's a good experience to get on all boards. Maybe when you're young, you don't need to ask those questions because you need to sit on those boards to figure out which ones you like, which ones you don't, what works, what doesn't work. And maybe they just have to sit on those boards and learn like we did. I don't know. But
it was a great lesson.
It was.
I agree. I don't know that there's any magic formula. I think you sit on it, see how it is, and then have the courage to resign at the appropriate time if it isn't something that suits your passions.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. It's how do we tell them to say no when enough is enough? Like, this isn't working for me. I don't have to sit on it for 6 years. I can get off whenever I want to get off. I can resign from this board, or I can stay and I can change it and I can add value. And, you know, I can take responsibility for shaping some of the things that I don't like.
What's a board you are currently sitting on?
So right now I have the two. So I have IWF, and that leads me to the chapter exec and then the national board of directors as well for IWF. And then I'm on the Royal Highland Fusiliers of Canada Council, which is a council that is part of the unit, the regiment, but it is really a board of directors. It's set up that way as from a governance model.
What are your thoughts or personal experiences with regards to the number of women represented on boards?
Another good question. I think we're getting better. My personal opinion is I think we go to a lot of the same women. And that's what I've found really incredible about IWF lately is that we have opened up this door to all of these new women that, and I'm very involved in the community. I think I know a lot of people in the community. And our chapter, I have now gotten to know, we're now almost 70 people. And I would say that there's 35 new women, senior women, that I have never met before in this community. And I'm like, where were they? Well, how come we haven't run in the same circles? How come I haven't seen them before? And I think that through that, we will get to know more board members and see more women, different women, be on boards. And I think that's my challenge to myself is we got to find new blood. We've got to find new ideas and be a little bit more creative when And it's not just women, it's men too. Like, it's the same people over and over and over again that show up. And maybe that's because you go to busy people to do things and they do them and they get them done and they sit on these boards and they're passionate. But I think that there's others that would enjoy a seat at the table.
You mentioned the council you were on is one of the boards you were on.
Mm-hmm.
You have a special connection with the Canadian Armed Forces, and you were recently appointed the Honorary Colonel for the Royal Highland Fusiliers of Canada, making you the first woman to hold that position. How did that make you feel?
Amazing. So it's a huge honor to be appointed, first of all. I sat on the council since 2012, and I was asked to be on council by Tom Jenkins, who at the time was the honorary colonel. And Tom, of course, is the chairman of the board of Open Text. So that was quite an honor. I knew nothing about the military, nothing about the regiment, nothing. In fact, you know, I'm Swiss and I'm of Mennonite background. Like, we have no family members. We had family members that served in the army, but built roads and did other things. They wouldn't carry guns. So, you know, I knew very little. I know a lot now, but I knew very little. So I sat on the council from 2012 to 2018. And probably 2017, the commanding officer of the time, Mark Poland, who is a crown attorney. So our regiment is a reserve unit, and that means that all the soldiers have day jobs. And then they agree to one night a week, one week in a month, which is bullshit because they do a heck of a lot more than that. But Mark Poland came to me, and his family has a huge background in the military. And he said to me, Jane, I'd like you to be the next honorary colonel. So it's up to the commanding officer to put a name forward. And what happens is when the name goes forward, it goes all the way up the chain. So it goes to brigade, then it goes to division, then it goes to the Minister of National Defense's office.
Wow.
And then it finally ends up on the Minister of National Defense's desk for signature, if it's approved all the way up the chain. And then it comes all the way back down the chain. And so the chain of command is real. When you hear chain of command, it is a real thing. So anyhow, Mark came to me and I said, I don't know, Mark. I was still running my entrepreneurial company, but I was also just getting into real estate. So it was that kind of time when I was shifting and thinking, well, now I'm starting basically a new business. Do I have time to actually put into being the honorary colonel, lieutenant colonel? And I said no to him.
Oh, wow, you did. I did. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then he came back with another person from council and said, we really want you to think about this. And so I did more research and I thought about it and I thought, well, if it actually happens, like if my application actually makes it all the way up the chain and the Minister of National Defense says yes and it comes back down, then maybe it's worth considering. So we put the application in and sure enough, it went faster than anyone else. So usually it takes over a year. Lately, it's been taking 2 years for the applications to go up and come back down. Mine was done in like 2 months. I was like,
wow,
well,
that's
this
crazy.
Is interesting.
I'm assuming you thought it would take a long time.
I did.
As government things do, right?
Yeah. Nope. They had it approved like right away. So I was appointed in June as the lieutenant colonel. And that was 2018. And it's a 3-year term. So then during COVID, you know, that was pretty much my term. And it was sad. And Bernie Malool from Malool Blamey was the honorary colonel at the time. And he loves the military and he wanted to do so many things. And he did so many things. But his wings were really clipped because of COVID. So he ended his term in 2021. And we went for a year in limbo. So Malcolm Matheson was nominated as the next honorary lieutenant colonel, and I was meant to go into the honorary colonel role. And so we waited a year. Finally, after a year, it came down the chain that I was appointed the honorary colonel, and Malcolm still wasn't appointed. His appointment came like 3 months later. So it's an interesting unit. We are right now putting the application up for an extension to my honorary colonel. So I may have it for another 3 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, it has to go up the chain,
yes.
And it has to come back down the chain.
So every time it has to go up. So
yep.
Lieutenant colonel all the way up,
yep.
Colonel all the way up. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And why the extension? Because you're doing such a fabulous job, or are there other circumstances?
I think it's partly...
You're doing a fabulous job.
Partly that, yeah.
Yes, good.
And partly because it was the tail end of COVID, mm-hmm. And partly because we haven't really put into place who we would like to be the next. So It would make sense that Malcolm would come into the honorary colonel role, but we haven't thought about who the next lieutenant colonel will be. So every commanding officer has a 3-year term. The regiment does change quickly. And during that term, like, there's different leadership styles and there's different things that, you know, they're doing. And right now we've just come off Operation Arrowhead Guardian, which was a year long brigade exercise. So
a year long exercise.
Yeah. And our commanding officer and our RSM ran the whole show for a year. So it was huge. And it was so big. There were 729 soldiers involved. It was up at Meaford this summer. And Malcolm and I went up for 2 nights and watched the exercise take place. So it's a training exercise, but it brings the entire brigade together. And we're 31 Brigade. We also had some of 32 Brigade involved with this to make it a full battalion. And it was incredible to watch them out in the field. So, you know, we're out in our CAD pat. And just so you know, I have an entire room in my basement full of Army gear.
Wow.
Anything you could possibly imagine. So,
you know, wear for all the different scenarios, I assume.
Absolutely.
Dress and then exercise and all of those things.
And mess. Yeah, there's everything. So, yeah. And every Thursday I go to the armory and I have my CAD pad on. So I'm in my greens and go down and hang out with the soldiers. And, you know, I have a little route that I take in the armory that I go and I talk with the CO and the RSM and the ADJ and the DCO. And then I go over to the finance area and I talk with the soldiers in that area. And then I go down to the band because we have an amazing pipes and drums band.
I love pipes.
I know, they're so great. Fantastic. We had a mess dinner on the weekend with the brigade. It was the brigade command conference and we hosted it. So we had a big mess dinner on Saturday night with all of the different regiments from the brigade and it was incredible.
So we're talking a little before November. This will air near the end of November, but I assume that there are lots of Remembrance Day ceremonies around this.
Yes.
What is planned?
So we always parade on November 11th, and this year we'll be in Kitchener. And we rotate between Cambridge, Kitchener, and Waterloo. So what we will do is spread out between those three municipalities at the Cenotaph. But the unit itself, the regiment itself, will be parading in Kitchener. But, you know, kind of tying in IWF and the regiment, I am hosting all of the IWF women that will attend on November 9th to come down. It is our parade night at the regiment. So we're going to have the IWF women meet the soldiers, listen to their stories about being deployed, listen to their training stories, watch them get ready for Remembrance Day, and, you know, hopefully learn a little bit about what our regiment is.
That's such a wonderful idea because it's bringing women from different areas of business and they probably don't have a lot of exposure to the military, and perhaps the military individuals they'll speak to don't have a lot of experience meeting women in the leadership positions that they're in.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And like I said before, we're reservists. Mm-hmm. So when I was out in the field in Meaford, I went out as the exercise was ending, and I always go out and I take a great big bag of, you know, candy and all kinds of different things because they've been out in the field for 9 days.
Wow.
And when I get out there, I have my chocolate and everything and chips, and they're like, oh my gosh, ma'am, this is so great. But I always talk to them and I say, okay, how many of you are currently looking for work? And I would say probably close to 10 put up their hands. They were standing in the field just in that one spot that day. It wasn't all 700 of them. Mm-hmm. It was 25 of them,
right.
50 of them. And so that me bringing the IWF women to the armory is there's an ulterior motive.
But a good one.
But a good one, yeah, because I know everyone's looking for talent. And anybody who comes through the army is trained from a leadership perspective, is trained from a discipline perspective. They are good employees. Now, the other side of that is sometimes they are deployed and sometimes they go away for 6 or 7 months to represent and serve our country, which isn't a bad thing either.
No.
But I think it's an opportunity. Part of what I do as the honorary colonel is community connect. So I try and bring as much community into the armory. It's usually through our gala dinner and our Feast of St. Andrew, which is coming up at the end of November. Mm-hmm. And that's usually how we introduce people to the Armory. But this is a different, this is special. And the soldiers are really looking forward to it.
So you come from a background of entrepreneurship generally, and now you are the colonel, honorary colonel of this regiment. Tell me about leadership styles, and did you have to adjust, or were you able to take some of your current leadership styles in your day job, in quotes, and apply it to your honorary colonel position?
Mm-hmm. So the honorary colonel position is a fun position, and it is in the Army, but it's kind of outside the Army. So I do fall in when we parade, especially when we march. We did the Fallen Fighter Firefighter March, and we marched from the Fallen Fighter Cenotaph Memorial, which is right by the center in the square,
yes,
all the way downtown to the other cenotaph, mm-hmm, down Duke Street, and then back up Queen Street back to the memorial. So I don't get to march very often with the regiment. They usually have me waiting for them and standing in all of my gear. They're like, thanks, ma'am, but you stand over there.
We're going to do our job.
Exactly, exactly. And they train to do it.
Yes,
I do not train to do it.
No.
So it's – but I got to march, and it's interesting. It's very much a chain of command, and it's very much in our unit. I have the highest rank, even more than the commanding officer, mm-hmm, but the commanding officer is the highest rank by far. So everyone listens to him. And I think in the beginning, the soldiers didn't know how to talk to me because they have a chain of command, and they talk to, you know, privates talk to corporals and corporals,
yes,
talk to captains. And you don't go from private to talking to the honorary colonel. You just don't do that typically unless you're spoken to. Mm-hmm. So what I've created with the soldiers, which I think I've created, is through my route that I do every Thursday, I always stay around after they're done parading, and I visit every single mess. So we have three messes. One is the officer's mess, one is the NCO and sergeant's mess, and one is the junior ranks. And I spend a lot of time in the junior ranks, usually buy them all a beer and bring them chips, and, you know, I can bribe my way into anywhere. But they've gotten to know me, and we talk and we have a great time. And I talk with the NCOs, and then I spend time with the officers. And the officers' mess is where I belong, mm-hmm, where I hang out. But then I ask permission and I get into the other ones. And I think that is part of being entrepreneurial, you know, coming out of your comfort zone. I can just go down and hang out with the officers and go home. That's not what I want to do. I want to understand where their problems are, where their challenges are, where their victories are, and, you know, what they're doing. And a lot of them are deploying. So it's like, are you nervous? What are you doing? How do you do this? And, you know, it's as much a learning experience for me.
Well, it sounds like it's developed into quite a passion for you. And I find it fascinating that you had very little connection to it in the beginning. So that must be a lot of fun that you found that.
It is. It is. And I'm super glad that I found it. And I'm super glad that, you know, Mark continued to say, I really think you should think about it, because it's an opportunity that very few civilians get to do. And I'm just thrilled that I got to do it. I'm absolutely thrilled. Going out to Petawawa, going to Borden, going to Meaford, you know, being on the field with the troops, it's an experience no one gets to do. You know, shooting guns, shooting, who gets to do that?
You've had many different careers. What was your first experience in a leadership position?
It was at the city of Kitchener. Well, it was probably before that. When I was young, this is funny, but when I was young, where our cottage was, we had all kinds of different things that could be done, and it was an association. So there was a dining hall that had a tuck shop and a restaurant, and there were two golf courses, and there was a boathouse, and, you know, all kinds of different things. But I was asked, I started off when I was 11 cleaning cottages, and I begged and begged and begged for a job. And they said, yeah, you can have a job. You can clean cottages. I'm like, great. You know, I get to do something. By the time I was 13, I was in the office, and the office had traditionally been for somebody who was in their late teens, or somebody who, you know, a mom who was up there all summer and maybe wanted some extra hours or to do something. So for me to be put in the office at 13 was a huge thing. And I stayed there until I was 18, which meant I ran all the books. I did, you know, everything.
It was what a great learning experience.
It was a huge learning experience. I did all the scheduling. And so that was truly one of my first leadership positions. And my uncle and aunt were running the show. They were the managers at the time. And they were so good to me. My aunt especially was the first person who took me under her wing and gave me that. And so there's a woman promoting a woman. My next job was at the city of Kitchener, and Valerie Jabot was my boss, and she promoted me. She hired me. I had no experience.
What was your job at City of Kitchener?
So I started as business development technician, and I remember being in the interview, and she's like, do you know about our business parks? I'm like, oh my God, businesses have parks? That's so cool. And she hired me anyhow. But and so through her leadership and through her guidance and her giving me opportunities to do things, when she retired, I became director of economic development. So I was the youngest director at the city at the time. So I was 32 when I became director. And I was full of piss and vinegar, and I think I lasted.
As we all are.
I know, and I think I lasted until I was like 35. And I was like, "Oh, I can't do this," you know, decision by committee, and it's just, you know, the city does great things, but at the time they were moving too slow for me. So I left and went to this new upstart organization called Communitech, and I became the vice president of operations there. And I was there for 5 years, and then I moved on to Deloitte and was director of business development for, I think it was 7 years, and loved that job. I had all of Southwestern Ontario.
So you started at 11. Who or what inspired you to be so ambitious and have the drive that you do?
I don't know. I think it was probably out of necessity. My dad's an accountant, and you know, he's a driver. He is a big driver. My mom always, she didn't work in the beginning, but she always wanted to work. And so when she finally worked, she was the happiest she'd ever been. But my dad, he'd be like, okay, for an allowance, you need to go and you need to do these things. My allowance was crap. So I'd be like, well, if I get money for doing these things, if I went out and got a job, I'd have my own money. And that was really the driver behind that. And so when I got this summer job and, you know, got me out of the house too, mm-hmm. out from my mom and my dad. And it's like, I have to go because I have a job. And it was Saturday mornings. That was it. But it was great. And at $1.15 an hour, you know, I got my little paycheck at the end of the day, but it was great.
Well, it's your first taste of freedom. So I think that's interesting. And not everybody starts that young. So that's why I wanted to ask, because it's a special person who does that at such a young age.
Mm-hmm. And then I came home after that summer and I worked for Bingaman's. And I remember my mom had to come in with me and Jonas was still alive. And Jonas said, is she allowed to work? And my mom said, yes, she will work. And will you drive her here and pick her up? And my mom said, yes, we will. So I started as a banquet waitress. At that fall then, I was probably grade 7 or grade 8, and that was when you could work. Like now I think you have to be 15 before you can get
a job.
There's
a lot of rules, yes.
Yeah.
It's hard. And when young people have ambition, it is a bit squashed by those rules.
Yeah, yeah. They really truly have to be entrepreneurial now.
Correct.
So
you were at Deloitte for quite a while, and then you decided to venture into the entrepreneurial side of the world. And for me, an important part of this podcast is not just celebrating our successes, but also talking about our missteps and what we have learned from them.
Mm-hmm.
I watched your presentation from FU Nights, which was such a hilarious way to share our stumbles in life. They need to keep doing that.
They are.
Oh, they are.
Yeah,
oh,
they are.
Good.
They just had another one.
Oh, good.
Scott Higgins was on it. Who else? I couldn't make it, but I just did another one in Toronto as well.
Did you?
Yeah.
So is it a...
It's a global thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's a great way to share instead of it being such a downer. It was so funny. Your talk was so funny and engaging, and I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
So in your FU Night talk, mm-hmm. you talk about your baby business, Shady. Mm-hmm. Can you share the most meaningful lesson you learned from this experience?
Mm-hmm. I think it's picking the right partner. And, you know, Nicole, my business partner at the time, and I were neighbors, and we were also friends. And that was great, and it was her idea. But she had never really been in sales or wanted to do sales. I remember being so frustrated at times when I would say, okay, here's your list to call today, because that's all we did was smile and dial and social media. And she wouldn't do social media and she wouldn't smile and dial. And I felt very alone. I would do the smile and dial all day, and then at night I would get online, and I know everybody's looking for content. So Marilyn Dennis and Good Morning America, like we were on all the shows.
Wow.
Yeah. So she would show up for all of that.
That's fun.
But we did a ton of stuff together, and then I did a ton of stuff by myself. And it was a lonely journey. It really was a lonely journey. But that would be my biggest learning experience is pick the right partner. Make sure it's not just because of an idea or because you're friends. It's really think about who is the right individual to work with, because I have never worked so hard in my life as I did when I did Shady. And I work hard.
You do, absolutely. So Shady wound down, and mm-hmm. was it abrupt or was it sort of a slow burn?
So I sold it.
You sold it, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can say I had a successful exit.
So you walked away, and your next career, which is your current career, is real estate, commercial real estate. How did you end up deciding that that was going to be your next career?
Throughout my entire career, I had thought about real estate. I'd always thought about it. And when I left the city of Kitchener in the first place, I actually interviewed with a couple of companies, but it wasn't right. The timing wasn't right. So then I went to Communitech and I met all these tech companies. And then I went to Deloitte and I met more of everybody. And then I did Shady. And then when I was leaving that, I thought, I have this amazing address book. How do I work with all the people that I've met throughout the years and do something that I think I would love to do? And that's where I thought commercial real estate would be the perfect fit. And it kind of brings me back to my first job. It's kind of that full circle. So I took all the courses, and John Whitney had actually come to me and said, I think it's time that you get into commercial real estate. Like, this is really – and John had been part of my career all the way through on the fringes. So John said, I want you to come in. I want you to be part of my business from an ownership perspective. And I thought, it fits. So I went and did the courses. I became an owner of Whitney and Company with John and with his daughter, Ginger. And we did this I left in December 2021. We just came down on different sides of a lot of issues, and we just decided that it was best that we part. So I went over to Avis & Young, which is a global firm, has all kinds of resources. I basically talked to all the firms when I was leaving, and Avison was the team that I really thought I would enjoy working with, and I do. I love working with everybody that's there.
Well, good for you for sort of interviewing your next step. I think that's something we all learn along the way, but sometimes we don't execute. Was that easy for you to do? Because if you're leaving and you have nothing on the horizon, sometimes we feel like we should take the first offer that comes. But for you to take a pause and explore all your options is probably the best way to do it. Was that an easy thing for you to do?
I wouldn't say it was easy, because they all sounded great at the time. I would say it was interesting. I didn't know how all the shops operated and what perks they had, what benefits they had, what resources they had. And I wanted a global team. And Avison reminds me a lot of Deloitte from a structured perspective. So I felt very comfortable with all of that, you know, all the PowerPoint presentations and everything else that they do. But I felt very comfortable with that. So it was an interesting learning experience doing this. And it gave me an opportunity to really sit down with some of the people that are running all of these shops and have great, great conversations.
Let's talk a little bit about leadership in general now. As a leader, how do you stay mindful of who is at the table and who is missing, be it in the workplace, on a board, or anywhere else?
That's something you just got to stay on top of. And so for the council, for the RHFC council, I am on the nominations committee. And, you know, we go through that all the time. We have a skills matrix that we've done. And, you know, we're putting people into these areas, but we're still seeing, and I'm going to say it, a lot of old white men that, I shouldn't say old, middle-aged white men. We're trying our hardest to diversify, but it's a challenge to find all of the right people with all of the right skills, whether it's women or, you know, different ethnic cultures. It's hard. But my thought is that our council has to represent who our soldiers are. And our soldiers have different faces and different genders. And we have to represent them on council.
What are your thoughts on the state of women in leadership today at the C-suite level, on boards, or emerging leaders?
I think it's great. I really do. I think we have lots of women in lots of great positions. Our IWF chapter just represents that. And I think we're touching like just a small amount of the ones that we could be touching in Waterloo Region. We may be a little bit more progressive here and a little bit more fortunate maybe than other communities, but I think we're on the right track. And I'm very, very much looking forward to the next generation and the generation after that, like your daughter being entrepreneurial and doing what she does. That's just one of that in generation that I think will be amazing when they get into roles like us, and they will ask questions, and you know, they won't take no necessarily for an answer, and they will push to get where they want to be. And we need more women like that. We need more people like that generally. And I truly think that our society has become very much a status quo society. We don't want to ruffle feathers. We don't want to get sued. We don't want to get in trouble. We need to rock that boat just a little bit, I think, because we're just becoming status quo in my mind. We need to rock it. I don't want to lose our mojo.
And where's an example of a time that you've rocked the boat?
Oh, my.
Well, just one. Or we could do a whole podcast on it.
We could do a whole podcast on that. I don't know.
Isn't that a criteria for IWF? You have to rock the boat, then you get in.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, yeah, now we notice who you are.
That's right.
I think, I ask a lot of questions, and I've always pushed. I've always, even at the city of Kitchener, it was like, I want to climb that corporate ladder. I want to do things that nobody else has done. And being in economic development, we were a group, and I think they still are a group that doesn't necessarily fit within the city norms. So economic development was that kind of out there group that sold land and, you know, went to trade shows to sell the city and, you know, talk about the city and market the city, and just a little different than every other group within the city of Kitchener. So I think I learned to rock the boat really in that area. And we could push council. We could say, you know what? If we want to have this business here, if we want to bring this business to our community, this is what we need to do. Whereas everybody else was like, well, nope, these are the rules, and this is how we play in our sandbox. And we would play outside the sandbox more than we played in the sandbox. So I think that was really a good learning ground for me.
So what's next for women in leadership?
Wow, that is an interesting question. I think, you know, in our community, we've conquered, maybe not conquered, but we have more women politicians than any other community in Canada. And to me, that is a huge leadership role.
It's amazing, really, the results of the last minute. I'm assuming you're talking about the municipal election, yep. But yes, the amount of women leaders that came out of that was incredible.
Yeah. And even when we look at the MPs and the MPPs, we have a lot of representation by women. So we have a lot of women leaders. We have a lot of women that are leading our not-for-profits. So what is next for women in leadership? I think it's just continuing to push. It's continuing to show up, continuing to be there. We have a great diversified leadership group in Waterloo Region overall. And I love that. I have a funny story. So last week was the end of Oktoberfest. And one of our IWF members, Tracy, who runs Oktoberfest, ran the first ever Damenfest. And a gentleman showed up to Damenfest. It was mostly women. And I know this individual, and he saw me, and he beelined it over, and he's like, Jane, it's all women here. I feel like really weird that I'm here. And I said, why? I said, for my entire career, 40 years, I've been showing up at events where it's all men. Like, you should embrace this. You should enjoy this. And he's like, no, I don't think I should be here. I just don't think I should be here. I'm like, suck it up, Buttercup, because, you know, this is an opportunity for you. First of all, you're different from everyone else that's in this room. And that's what you have to understand. And that's what I always understood as a woman going into a room with all men. It's like, I'm different. And everybody here is going to want to talk to me because I'm not one of them. Instead of thinking no one wants to talk to me because I'm not one of them. It was exactly the opposite. And for him too, it was the opposite. He kind of clung for a bit and I'm like, off you go. but it's funny when you think about that perspective. I think we have an opportunity to really step into the ring and lead in many different ways. Many different ways. And one of them is just showing up.
Thank you so much for being here, Jane. I really appreciate all the stories that you've shared and all the wisdom that you've imparted on us. And thank you from an IWF member for being our president and running a fantastic Canada Connects and really growing this chapter and giving all of us the opportunity to meet women from all over the region.
Well, thank you, Amy. So I'm just going to add this in because this whole podcast idea is your idea.
Thank you.
When you came to me, I was like, oh my goodness, this is the best. Yes, we have to do this. So I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled that you're doing this and interviewing all of our chapter members. And I'm thrilled that they're signing up. And, you know, one thing about IWF is that we do shout outs and, you know, we talk about the good things that we do and the successes that we have. And I think we need to do more of that. So I think this is an opportunity to do that. So thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, it's my privilege, and to get to hear everyone's stories, I think that I'm the lucky one.
Well, we're all going to hear everybody's stories. So, and that's because of you. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate and subscribe to our podcast. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so more leaders can find us and be inspired by the stories our Voices of Leadership have to share. If you would like to connect with us, please visit the Voices of Leadership website. The link can be found in our show notes, available wherever you listen to podcasts.